America haunt the imagination, masking a danger few are willing to confront.
This area isn't on the way to any place. It's just you.
Existing on the edges of civilization.
It takes a certain kind of man to live here. It's not for everybody.
From the Appalachian's Blue Ridge Mountains to Montana's Rockies and the Great Northern Alaskan Range.
This is a different world. It's a hardcore lifestyle, but it's one that we choose.
Go ahead.
Ha! Get back to our primitive roots.
People don't really ever see where the life of it comes from or the death.
These men struggle to survive while confronting deadly predators and winter's ultimate force.
At 60 below, once you get cold, you just can't warm back up.
I'm pretty wore off. I just got to keep going.
The line between life and death is slim here.
You do have to fight every day. That's the way it is.
Relying on lost skills.
These mountains, they mean everything to me. These mountains are my life.
They are the last of their kind. They are mountain men. Triplet, North Carolina sits on the edge of the Cherokee National Forest, perched in the shadow of the Tennessee border.
Ready? Go ahead. Good boy. My name is Eustace Conway. I'm a mountain man. Live in the mountains, feel the mountains, breathe the mountains. That's a heavy load, isn't it, boys? What do I do for a living? I live for a living.
When I moved out in the forest 35 years ago, people said, oh, you can't escape reality. I went to reality. You're living in a virtual reality. You don't even know where your stuff comes from, don't even know where your poop goes.
For me, it's all about being close to the land. Skinny dog, you don't need kale, do you? Growing my food and seeing where stuff comes from. Modern Americans don't learn how to grow food or gather food or store food.
This will be supper.
They don't know how to hunt. They don't know how to skin or butcher. If you don't know how to get food, how are you going to live?
At least pretty good raw. 3-month-old sushi is not bad.
We're just harvesting every little tiny drop of meat.
There's a gut pile behind every hamburger. You just hire a middleman to do the dirty work.
Gringo, you about ready for supper?
Here, Gringo. Your buddy, yeah, you're a good dog.
Life is a choice for everybody. I choose to live this way.
The word Cherokee has many translations, but most believe it means those who live in the mountains. Eustace chose this area as the place to build the sanctuary he calls Turtle Island.
The name Turtle Island comes from the stories of the Native Americans. Many tribes consider the earth supported by a turtle. We hunt our own food, and we teach traditional woodworking, and we build our buildings, and we do blacksmithing.
America's original pioneer, Daniel Boone, is said to have hunted these woods, and Eustace embraces the frontier way of life.
It's all about freedom. We need to go back into our ancestral heritage and pluck it right from the land.
Making just enough to pay his bills, Eustace lives completely off the land. His workday is so strenuous, he burns up to 3,500 calories a day. So just to maintain his weight, he must eat 5,000 calories a day. Making gathering food job number one.
Good earth is well worth preserving, wouldn't you think? We'll get back to our primitive roots.
The constant work also means Eustace can't do everything on his own. But he's able to trade his knowledge, along with food and shelter, for the help he needs.
It's just 100 different little jobs each and every day. Some of them are 5-minute jobs, some of them are 2-hour jobs, some of them we'll never do again.
coming over here to compost the urinal. It doesn't smell very good, and it's not very hygienic.
Eustace has 8 people, including a family of 4, living with him and learning survival skills this season.
For 14 months, their world is rocked. And then move them to the lower section we call the rabbit pen.
But living in the wild is never simple or easy.
The way we live out here, there's danger every day. One wrong move and you're over the edge and you're done. Trees falling, rock slides, snow, ice. There's a lot of dangerous activities, but I like the challenge. We're up for it.
And the biggest challenge for any mountain man is weather.
Rainy day. I'm not going to be able to plant that kale. I was going to diss that soil while it was dry.
Winter is just 30 days off, and in order to feed everyone, Eustace must get the crops planted.
If I don't get this in the ground, I'm not going to have a crop. I won't have something to eat this winter. I won't have something to eat this spring.
Kale is a winter vegetable and a crucial element of Eustace's diet.
Eating that stuff's got some serious nutrition. That's what keeps me going through the winter.
If the soil's too wet, the crop won't take. With 2 fields to plant, Eustace needs the weather to break.
You never know how a day is going to go. It depends on the season. Nature is doing what it's going to do.
The terrain in Appalachia means floods happen quickly. Winter rains have claimed 71 lives in just the last decade.
Nature. We're going to just have to see what happens.
I'm concerned about winter coming on, and I need to have food coming off of this. If I don't get it planted now, then I won't have my spring crop.
2,500 miles away, in northwest Montana, the countdown to winter is moving even more quickly for Tom Orr. He knows Big Sky Country's Rocky Mountains can be unforgiving.
I've lived in northwest Montana for about 32 years now. The forest means life to me. It's my way of living. I don't know what I would do without this. I mean, this just turned into my life up here in the woods.
The country's 4th largest state, Montana has a population of less than 1 million people. But Tom and his wife, Nancy, have come to appreciate the solitude.
It's been a lot of physical work. Doing the hides is hard. Living this life is very hard. Tom, he doesn't have the best knees in the world. He's got old rodeo knees.
I rodeoed until I was 41, which is pretty old. Well, who knows what the future is going to bring? I'll just ride it out to the end and do whatever I got to do to pull through it.
After 3 decades on the Yak River, Tom's children and grandchildren want him to give up this physical lifestyle and retire. But with Montana winters lasting 7 months, he's got no time to think about slowing down.
I can't believe it's fall already and we're doing this again. Where'd summer go?
Winters here are so harsh that Tom must spend the rest of the year preparing for them.
We have to get everything done. We have to have certain things in order or we're going to get in trouble. We're trying to get wood in, put the garden to bed, get the dog hunted, gather some grouse meat.
Good bird, Ellie.
There's a lot to do. It's a busy time of year.
Tom constantly watches the sky, looking for signs. Today, he catches a glimpse of a hawk he calls Belle. Her return usually means winter is closing in.
Everything's all kind of bottling up on us here.
It always does. We never get ready. We just run out of time.
When Belle comes back, we can count on winters right behind him. Should we get after it?
We better.
Mm-hmm.
We're burning daylight.
With the closest supermarket 100 miles away, Tom must stock up on food for winter. To do that, he and neighbor Will need to find a winter hunting ground.
A beautiful day.
Another one.
Huh? I'm Will Stringfellow, and Tom and I have been buddies for 20, 30 years.
All right.
But they won't be the only ones feeling the pressure from winter's imminent arrival. The local grizzlies will be looking to stock up, too.
Well, the bear killed a tree, huh? Nice large tree. Well, that's because that tree's been killed by the bear. The bear scraped the bark off the trees and it kills them. The needles are turning earlier, the trees just dying. A week ago, there was just a couple piles of bear scat right in here, and now there's like five piles. Well, that bear's just been hanging in here.
Is the bear population up, Tom, or what do you think the deal is with bears?
I don't know. I've heard a lot of people have been seeing bears here lately.
Due to their protected status, the grizzly population of the lower 48 states has risen an estimated 340% since 1975, while the black bear population is approaching a half million.
With the grizzly bears, we worry about our dogs. And they eat them. They eat the dogs. Ellie, come on in here, Ellie.
Where'd she go, Tom?
I don't know where she's at.
This population growth has led to more interactions with humans.
Come, Ellie.
Two fatal bear maulings have already occurred in Montana this year. They were the first here in more than two decades.
Anytime you got a bear moving around, you never know what can happen, and they'll sure come kill your dog.
Ellie, come. Ellie! If Ellie goes missing, it's not a good thing. Lots of things could happen out here. Come, Ellie, where are you? Get in here. Come on.
Coming up, Tom and Will mount a search party.
Come, Ellie, where are you? Ellie's like a child in medicine. Ellie!
And across the country, preparations for winter have begun.
Weather's supposed to turn bad. This will be my only window to get out.
When you fly like this, I imagine my day's coming.
Montana is the traditional home of the mountain man. More than 3,000 once roamed this landscape, making their living from the Rockies. Now, only a handful remain.
Go on, Ellie.
While scouting for a winter hunting ground in grizzly country, Tom Orr's dog, Ellie, went missing.
Come, Ellie, come.
Where'd she go, Tom?
I don't know where she's at. We're not at the top of the food chain. We got the grizzlies and the wolves and the lions. You know, no telling what's out there.
A lot of times, Ellie's going to move away from us, and there's times you can't see her. Anytime you got a bear moving around, you never know what can happen, and they'll sure come kill your dog.
Ellie, come. No, Ellie's... she's like a child in this, you know.
There's just there's a lot in the woods that can hurt you.
Ellie, girl, come here, buddy. Where in the hell have you been at, huh? Good girl. This is bear country, so we just gotta live with them. The wolves, too, we're gonna have to live with the wolves.
While Tom continues to search, 2,500 miles northwest, the harshest season has already begun on the Alaskan frontier.
Come on, girl. I am the ugliest son of a alive, and if anybody wants to argue the point, I'll fight him for it.
Marty Maiorato lives in Two Rivers, 23 miles from Fairbanks. But each winter, he leaves his wife and young daughter to head into the wildest place on Earth.
Woo!
The Northern Alaskan Range.
Being out here, the biggest thing is it's just you. There's no towns, villages. It's remote. It's not on the way to any place. This is the last good place of wild America. This land is untouched. That's just the way I like it.
Due to Alaska's sheer size, Marty, like many Alaskans, relies on a small bush plane.
This is my car. This is how I get around. It's how I get back and forth. The biggest challenge is the flying aspect of it. It's always kind of an anxious moment to load up the plane and make sure there's nothing broke from the last time I beat up on it. So I'm just making sure everything's as it should be. It's about 10 below this morning. Snowed a little last night. This is the first major snow of the year, so. I gotta get the skis put on the plane today.
To prepare his plane, Marty must winterize it,
It's kind of a little bit of a production switching from summer flying to winter flying.
Marty will swap out the tires for skis, but nothing in Alaska is easy. And doing the back-breaking work in freezing conditions makes it even harder.
That's part of the problem with cold. If it was 60 degrees, that would have just came right off. But the cold makes everything really stiff.
Marty has never seen another person while traveling to the North Alaskan wilderness. The flight to his remote cabin 200 miles away will take 3.5 hours. Perilous in perfect conditions, it's even more dangerous when temperature can reach 40 below.
If you get frost inside the tank and there's enough of it, it could gum it up to the point where the engine won't run. And then you come down, usually someplace you don't want to be. I've never wrecked, knock on wood. When you fly like this, I imagine my day's coming. This keeps the frost off the wings. You got to be really careful about it. Planes won't fly with frost on the wings. It doesn't take a whole lot, and your stall speed really changes. It may fly, and all of a sudden, you flip over.
When frost accumulates on a bush plane's wings, it weighs it down.
You can have a flight turn into a life or death situation pretty fast.
But the dangerous journey he's about to undertake isn't the only thing on his mind.
I need a picture I made.
You make a picture for Papa?
Uh-huh.
Oh, good, good. Before I head to the trap line, I like to spend as much time as I can with Dominique and Noah.
Don't forget this one.
Yep. Very nice, baby.
Those are for you.
Oh, well, thank you, baby. I'll bring them with me. So we try to keep it upbeat for Noah's sake. Well, for all of our sakes.
Like all Alaskans, Marty's at the mercy of the weather. So he tries to take precautions where he can.
Hey, darling, you want to come here for a second? And I'll give you the rundown on the plan for today.
All right.
If Dominique doesn't hear from Marty at predetermined times, she'll know something is wrong and where to send a search party to start looking for him.
If you do have a problem and you do have to set down, between here and the trap line, there's nothing. Call you before dark. You just always have to weigh your options and have extra plans. At 40 below, if you're cold or hurt at all, you know, you just aren't going to be able to do the things you need to do to stay warm. If it happens, hopefully I'll be prepared for it.
The weather is rolling in quickly.
Weather's supposed to turn bad tomorrow, so this will be my only window to get out, so I got to get going. Without this plane, I don't have much. If something happened to this plane when I was out there, I'm stuck then. In the winter, you gotta stay warm, and sometimes that's a full-time job, and you don't have time to do much else. Now, this plane is everything.
Just beats the storm out of two rivers.
Flying in and of itself is inherently dangerous. It is extremely unforgiving.
3 hours later, he reaches his remote landing zone. It's basically just a clearing in the woods about a half mile from the cabin. But the most dangerous part of any bush flight is the landing. The winds making it even more perilous.
The difference between wheels and skis is there's no brakes. And you do have the suspension, but it's just, you know, bungee cords. The jolt goes right to the plane. All right, we made it to God's country. And we're just going to put the plane to bed, get the wing covers on, get some blocks under these skis. Yeah, once I land, then I know that my plane's going to be sitting there a while, so I have to get it taken care of so that the next time I need to use it, it's usable. Yeah. See this here? This is a Lynx track right here.
That's a good sign. Because where you see lynx tracks, pretty good odds there's a lynx around.
Large predators are everywhere in the Alaskan wilderness.
There's a lot of bear in that country. They can get mean.
Alaska has 40,000 grizzlies and 11,000 wolves who are even more active this time of year.
Wolves attack people. It's something I worry about.
It's just flat dangerous.
The hike from the landing zone to the cabin will take Marty 30 minutes, so he keeps his rifle ready.
Part of being in bear country is, like, keep an eye on where they're at and what they're doing. The consequences are worse out here just because it's so remote. If a bear wants to go into your cabin, he's going to go in. It doesn't matter what you got going on. He's going to go in. So I have the rifle ready.
Before heading into the bush, Marty makes supply runs to the cabin. On his last trip, he placed planks with nails around the cabin perimeter. It's an early warning system, but it only works when he's inside.
That's a bear track right there. There's a lot of bears in this country, and they're naturally curious. They can get in if they want. There's a few bent, so there was a bear here.
Approaching the cabin slowly, Marty notices evidence of bear activity. He never knows what he'll find when he opens the door.
You can't get yourself in a situation that you can't get yourself out of.
The U.S. government defines wilderness as an area where man himself is a visitor who does not belong. But in the remotest reaches of Alaska, mountain man Marty Maiorato will spend the winter in solitude. With evidence of grizzlies in the area, he's even more careful than normal.
Well, there's a few nails bent here. A bear probably came in and stepped on us. You can see some are bent. That's a bear track right there.
If a bear wants to go into your cabin, he's going to go in. It doesn't matter what you got going on. He's going to go in.
Due to the remote location, an attack by any predator, no matter how minor, would be fatal.
Let's have a look inside. Oh, yeah. It all looks pretty good. Very nice.
I check around. I start opening up all the containers that have my gear in it and food and whatnot. Just start settling in.
I got my picture my baby girl made for me. Put it next to my collection.
Marty's flight took 3 hours across empty wilderness. With temperatures getting even more frigid and daylight in such limited supply, he won't be able to fly for weeks.
You have a couple hours of light. That's all you get.
Each week, Marty must travel across the Alaskan wilderness to check on his series of traps, a distance of 150 miles. Since that's roughly like going from New York City to Baltimore, Maryland, Marty relies on his snowmobile.
Yeah, this is a snow machine that I used to run the lines with. Anything that gets out here has to fit in that airplane. Obviously, these machines don't fit in as is, so I have to take them apart right down to the last bolt and last rivet. Then I bring them out here, and then I have to rebuild them. Hopefully it'll start.
Oh, she fired.
All right.
You know, 20 miles a day is probably an average. I'm on them every day, most days, all day.
The temperatures in northern Alaska can drop to 60 degrees below zero. This makes heat Marty's biggest concern.
It's dangerous cold. You can't go out and make a mistake when it's that cold.
To combat the cold, Marty needs 12 cords of wood. That's 360 square feet chopped and split. This could be a full-time job, but he must do it in his downtime.
Looking for a dead tree? Obviously, I got to burn dry wood, so I'm just looking for a dead standing spruce. Cutting firewood. When it's cold, it seems like that's all you do is trap once in a while, but mainly you just cut wood. There's a dead one right there.
Everything is tougher in the cold. Trees turn brittle. Metal weakens. and chains snap.
Sometimes they kick back, they can bind up in another tree and come back on you. See, that was rotten!
Being a mountain man is never easy, and their work is never done.
I got this one all cut up, so I'm gonna cut down another one before I start hauling it out. All right, now be heads up.
...4,300 miles southeast, the storm has finally broken over the Blue Ridge Mountains. But daylight is fading, and the first frost is coming any day now.
It's been an uphill battle the whole way on this one. Soil's too wet. Don't know if we'll have enough warmth to sprout the seeds, but you gotta try.
Eustace will attempt to use the ancient practice of hand sowing. It's less expensive than traditional methods, and he's found it more effective.
Well, this is some kale seed that we grew this past year. I'm gonna take these and throw them out like this. It does take a little knowledge. You have to cast it hard, cast it at the right angle, and you put each seed out with hope that it'll grow, but you don't really know. It's on top of the ground. Now I've got to get it just underground.
The final step in the planting process is called disking.
So I need to go hook up the disk. I don't have much daylight left today, so I need to get on it. Yeah, we're using the old disk. It's 100 years old and going strong. And come up, boys. Go ahead now. Good boy.
Disking is an old technique used to help the seeds take hold in the ground. Usually, this type of work is done by diesel tractors.
Go ahead. Ha!
But Eustace relies on true horsepower.
Better not get anything in front of these discs. They'll cut you and tear you. It's a dangerous contraption, especially like if you flip off. Go ahead. Ha! Good boy. Good boy. One thing about being on the edge with the wild. Good boys. Good boy. That hump was a little bit too much for me there. You learn to be able to roll with whatever punches come your way. Come on, boy. I got to keep on going. If I can see, I got to do this. I'm not punching out like it's the time to punch out on a time clock. It's nothing about that. I'm trying to get something to eat this year.
The crop is planted, but the heavy rains mean it may not take. So all Eustace can do now is wait. Just below the Canadian border in the Rocky Mountains, winter has arrived early, catching Tom Orr unprepared.
That's winter time here in the Yak.
The early snow has also left the local bears desperate for food.
One of the reasons we're concerned is as the bears are moving, the bears are hungry. This is the time of year. I mean, they're out looking for whatever they can find to eat on to get into their hibernation thing.
Terrifying because grizzly bears become even more aggressive when hungry.
The grizzlies, they wander these hills and looking for wounded animals.
There were already two fatal grizzly attacks near Tom's home this year.
The stakes living up here is survival, I think. If you gotta worry about something, you can worry about getting mauled by a grizzly bear.
With the days getting shorter, the grizzlies are becoming even more dangerous after dark.
Normally our dogs stay real close to the house here, unless a bear comes in at night.
Going outside?
And Nancy opened the door, and the dog ran out the door barking.
I hope that bear's not back. We do not need him around.
Ellie, where are ya?
Ellie, come.
There's a bear hanging around here real close. When they come right onto the property, of course, we worry about our dog.
Most of Montana is still considered frontier territory, meaning it has a population of 6 people or less per square mile. A grizzly seems to have taken an interest in mountain man Tom Orr's cabin.
Yeah, but they're 50 yards from us. And a big sucker, too.
Ellie, come.
Come here, Ellie. Come here, Ellie. I don't want you out there.
Ellie, come.
We lost our dog or something here. The bears are moving. The bears are hungry. And when they come right onto the property, of course, we worry about our dog.
Ellie, come. Where is she? Come.
Ellie, come.
That a girl. You stay safe with us.
Yeah, you stay here.
Good girl.
There's a bear hanging around here real close. Like to come out here in the night and stuff like that is kind of spooky.
Good girl, Ellie.
Like, we got to sure be careful and watch out for this stuff.
They're not afraid of you. We're not top of the food chain here.
I don't see anything.
Gives you something to feel a little funny about.
Come on, Ellie. You got to come in.
Come on, Ellie.
You got to be aware of it. You got to be ready to react in the right way to save yourself.
Come on, good girl.
The next morning, Tom checks for tracks.
Look like Bigfoot's been here.
Yes, doesn't it? And I wonder if this is the same bear that tore into our pigeon house. That's him.
Holy cow.
Boy, he's a big old sucker.
Look this right here. If I put my boot in it, I feel it's bigger than my boot.
Look at that. That's a big track there.
To see these huge grizzly prints, just mind-blowing.
How far is he from the house? Is he 75 yards from the house?
Yeah.
The bears, they've got hellish noses on them. I mean, they can smell from very long distances. I mean, he must have smelled something here. He must be attracted. Pretty spooky deal, having these grizzlies like this so close.
Despite the bear activity, Tom and Will head out.
I mean, I know they could kill a person, but hey, guys got to go from something sometime.
Tom knows he must find some food before the weather becomes too harsh.
Well, there's a bunch of deer tracks in here. There's been some deer in here.
Yeah.
Trying to get a little more meat for the winter. If you don't get any meat, you probably won't survive. The woods is going to get a little bit thicker up in here. We'll go on to where it gets a little thicker. We're rattling antlers, trying to attract bucks. And what this is an imitation fight between two bucks fighting over a doe, which should attract other bucks in the area.
Tom's noticed something unusual about the bears this season.
They say the grizzlies are getting on to the hunting thing so much that you can actually attract a grizzly bear by shooting a rifle in the air. They've been catching on.
Because they are so protected, bears now run towards gunshots like scavengers, knowing they may be able to get an easy meal.
Well, hold on a minute. Just listen a minute.
Did you hear that?
What's that?
I think I saw something move down there.
What is that? Well, the first thing you think of is the bear out there. Bears are really attracted to all this. They're here and they're around. So we got to be careful and watch out for this stuff because the grizzlies will come to a call also.
Anytime you got a bear moving around, you never know what can happen.
In the hills of North Carolina, Eustace is working to rebuild a deer stand that was ravaged by the recent storms.
If you could go get that locust piece, we might split that in half to make our primary floor support. You can just bring him up here.
Justin McGuire is lending him a hand.
What we want to do is pick out a tree somewhere in this area that we can build a stand in. Let's go up through here and just see if we can find a tree. There's several features that you look for in a tree, but you want one that's usually leaning a little bit, so when you put a ladder on it, like, it's easier to climb. If you can find one with a big crook or something, like a big limb sticking out, that's kind of what we want.
We're about to build a tree stand, and seems relatively easy, but I get the feeling it's probably not as easy as I think it is.
Justin is a young man that came from Georgia. A lot of people don't like him because he's stubborn like a mule or hard to handle. but I'm real clear on what I want, clear on my expectations. There's no room for irresponsibility. Hey, check this out. See that maple right there? So that's sturdy. It's got the lean on it. It's got the big limb coming out there to the side. Oh, man. This is like a tree made in heaven for this.
The tree Eustace chooses is among the sturdiest in the area.
Yeah, black locust is about like a rock. It's hard to get a nail to go in. It's easy to bend a nail.
Because it's untouched, local hunters often sneak onto Eustace's land. So to deter them from using the stand, he's careful to add a personal touch.
Well, when I first started building deer stands, basically I built them for Eustace. I put the stairs so far apart, nobody's going to climb them. You just, you have to like risk your life to get up there and like, ah! You know? So nobody hunts my stands.
Building a stand by hand is hard, dangerous work.
And it's hard work. It's strenuous. It's physical. We really get into learning, even if it is, you know, slinging a 16-pound sledgehammer 20,000 times a day.
Step one requires hauling multiple 50-pound logs up to 25 feet using nothing but a rope.
Yeah, so that thing is dangerous, you know. That sucker's heavy. Just take your time.
Justin is struggling to keep up.
One of the patterns that Justin is working on overcoming is there's alternative ways to interact.
Taking the log up, it was a little nerve-wracking.
I know, it's digging into my shoulder.
If a little thing gets in to irritate him, he explodes.
Damn stupid mother.
But that thing drops and catches me just right. There's no stopping me or it. We're going down.
Coming up, Tom struggles to catch up to winter's early start.
If I don't kill a deer, I'm going to starve this winter. We live in bear country, so we just got to watch out for them. It can be a pretty dangerous thing.
It's dark, and you're wondering, what's going on? Why isn't he home?
High in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, Eustace and Justin are struggling to build a new hunting hide.
Oh, God. Oh, no, it's digging into my shoulder.
When you get up on a high tree with heavy objects, you cannot have non-serving, irrational behavior. A little bit more and I can help you. That's right.
Oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
Get it? The dangerous part about making a mistake out here is that you can easily die.
Justin still has to haul up another 50-pound log.
Anything that's way up in the air, it can hurt you, break you.
Get there faster if I don't fall down first, right?
Exactly. You don't really know that until you get smashed or hurt or see somebody get knocked out and go to the hospital. Working with Justin, he explodes and he loses his focus and ability. Yeah, hand me that snap. No, he made some serious mistakes. A lot easier without that pole on your shoulder, ain't it?
Ooh, yeah.
Trust is a big issue here. There's no room for irresponsibility.
With the deer stand still unfinished and bad weather rolling in, Eustace will need to begin his winter hunt on foot.
It's important for everyone on the team to pull their weight, but truthfully, some people are going to have to pull the weight of others. Another beautiful day in the neighborhood. Oh, there's something. There's one. Oh, my.
While Eustace heads out, Justin is left behind, and he's not happy about it.
Well, while Eustace is out hunting, we're just working by ourselves. We're definitely not moving forward very quickly. I mean, these things need to get done, but there's other things that are more important.
On the opposite side of the continent, Marty is finishing up his preparation for life in the wild.
The wind's blowing.
Oh, there's my antenna pole.
I get a long pole and put the antenna way up high so that I can catch the AM signal.
Okay.
Even with all that, I still can't get the station very clear.
This is my mountain man radio tower, yeah.
Hundreds of miles away, a remote radio station delivers messages to the Alaskan bush.
And a strapline chatter on this Sunday evening. Only message we have tonight is going out to Marty Maruano and Dominique at Two Rivers. Hi, sweetie. We had a busy day today. I made a case and a half of them.
We had some interesting driving on the new snow. I'm not sure how much we have out there right now, but it's still coming down. Hopefully.
It's real nice to get a message from my girls. Let me know how they're doing.
Yeah, I miss them more and more all the time when, you know, the longer I'm out here. But this is what I do.
Deep in the Rockies, Tom's still struggling to find food for winter.
It's getting late in the day. It's getting a little later in the season. We need to get some fresh meat on the table.
And the local grizzlies becoming more aggressive is making the difficult job even harder.
There's a bear hanging around here real close. You got to keep your eyes on him. You get killed. I mean, we've got bear tracks on the river 50 yards from the house.
Tom's wife is worried as she starts to lock up for the night.
Well, I'm going to get things closed up for the night. Well, I got to make sure these doors are secured. I lock the inside. Yeah, that's good, because a bear could just get his little toenails right in there and oh, we'd have a heyday. We've got to do whatever it is we can do to keep those bears from destroying things here. That latch is a bear saver right there.
Since the bear showed up on their doorstep a couple of nights ago, Tom and Nancy have taken extra precautions by installing a new electric fence.
The bear was here earlier, tore into our pigeons. The fish and game gave us an electrified fence to put around the pigeon house.
Lining up, and it's flashing. All of those little boxes lit up. That means we've got good power. We're good to go for the night.
Well, it's gonna get dark pretty soon. I hope Tom's okay.
As night falls on the Yak Valley, Tom is still not home.
It's not a good feeling when it's dark, he's not home, and you're wondering what's going on, where is he? Is he all right? I wonder where he is. He can't be hunting, it's too dark for that. You know, what's going on? Why isn't he home?
Next time on Mountain Men, Eustace and Justin butt heads.
Even little things can set him off.
Rifle.
I don't need them to take care of me. I take care of myself.
And with temperatures plunging to 40 below, Marty fights for his life, stranded miles from the cabin.
I knew pretty quick I was going to have to walk about 10 miles. That was my mistake.
I'm exhausted.
You can't make a mistake when it's that cold.